Hi, I'm Mike Veneria Jr. with Alsperity Private Wealth. No matter your occupation, whether you work for a big company or you're a small business owner, everyone wants to keep as much of their earnings as possible. I specialize in tax minimization strategies and retirement planning that'll help you build a strong financial future for you and your future generations. Call me, Mike Veneria Jr. at 856-252-0107.
Securities through Sanctuary Securities, Inc., member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services through Sanctuary Advisors, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Hey, y'all, it's Chip Patterson from the Cover 3 Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. College football is about to enter its first ever 12-team playoff era, so join me, along with Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott, as we drop new episodes 5 times a week to close out the year. We've got reactions, bracket breakdowns, and best bets for these matchups with championship stakes. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Rich Zeoli Show podcast is sponsored by Mike Veneria Jr. with Alsperity Private Wealth.
Hi, I'm Mike Veneria Jr., Wealth Management Specialist. Make your retirement dreams a reality by creating your retirement plan today. Call me at 856-252-0107.
Some good news coming out of the House for once. They have banned sex changes for minors as part of the defense spending package, even though it doesn't belong in the defense spending package. Nevertheless, it should still be banned. Welcome back to the show. Glad you're here. 855-839-1210 on X at Rich Zeoli as we continue our fourth and final hour here on Drone Day. I got to switch gears here. There's so much other stuff I got to get to, but I appreciate all your calls today, all your thoughts, all of your tweets and your YouTube chat on the drones. I know we're all frustrated by this, and Kirby's answer, which I played you earlier today, is complete and utter BS. This is mostly man-powered drones or whatever nonsense he said. Anyway, so as part of the big spending package, the $900 billion spending package that the House just approved, as part of that, Section 708 states that, quote, medical interventions for the treatment of gender dysphoria that could result in sterilization may not be provided to a child under the age of 18. It was part of the National Defense Authorization Act. It was a vote of 281 to 140. This is the big story of the hour brought to you by our buddy, Dr. Mike Veneria, VeneriaDental.com. Year-end dental benefits. You only got a couple weeks left to use them. Don't let them expire. I was just at Dr. Mike's office yesterday. He's a great guy, great dentist. So reach out to him today, VeneriaDental.com. The annual defense bill includes a provision that prohibits sex change surgeries for minors of military members that may cause sterilization. Among those who voted for the NDAA were 200 Republican representatives and 81 Democrats, and 124 Democrats and 16 Republicans voted against it, according to the Daily Wire. The House passes $900 billion defense bill defunding transgender procedures for military minors. Today's NDAA is a step toward restoring our armed forces by rejecting the woke agenda and refocusing on military readiness. I wonder how many members actually read this thing. You know what I mean? Like, I wonder how many of them actually read this. I'm just curious because it's just such a massive spending package. I mean, I'm glad. Don't get me wrong. I'm glad that they're banning this for the children of military officials. It should be banned for all kids, in my opinion. I'm not saying it has to be on the federal level that ban would be, but it needs to be banned for children. But Republican Congressman Mike Rogers of Tuesday said he disagrees with the move to ban transgender procedures for military children, arguing that President-elect Donald Trump could resolve the issue upon taking office. My preference would be we just let the president deal with the issue. Why? But you're Congress, though. Your job is to deal with these issues. That's your job. That's part of your job. So, yeah, do that job, okay? And do that. I'm just curious how many of them read this massive spending bill. And I just wonder, as part of that, how much of that is going to go towards figuring out drones that are, I don't know, you know, flying over the Jersey coast. That's all. I'm just saying. I'm wondering all these things. This is just, I know I played this earlier, but I said I was going to move on from the drones, but I just have to play this one more time. I'm sorry. One more time.
We have not been able to, and neither have state or local law enforcement authorities, corroborate any of the reported visual sightings. To the contrary, upon review of available imagery, it appears that many of the reported sightings are actually manned aircraft that are being operated lawfully. The United States Coast Guard is providing support to the state of New Jersey and has confirmed that there is no evidence of any foreign-based involvement from coastal vessels. And importantly, there are no reported or confirmed drone sightings in any restricted airspace.
There you go. There you go. I feel much better. How about you? You feel better? Good. I'm glad. We all feel better. Oh, and by the way, as part of the reauthorization of the Pentagon, I have to wonder how much of that money is going to sneak over the border to Ukraine before this administration's over. You know, there's all these reports that they're selling pieces of the border wall. I mentioned this earlier in the show, but there's all these stories about this that the Biden regime is now rushing to sell off unused border wall materials so President Trump can't finish the wall quickly. The goal is to move all of it off the border before Christmas. It's an army of trucks deployed by this regime in Washington, taking everything to the government auction site where it'll all be sold for dirt cheap. Every single person involved in this needs to be locked up for a long time. It's so treasonous. And what the story says here is the final weeks of the Biden administration, truckloads of unused border wall materials are being hauled away from the Arizona border. And this video, which I'm playing, just shows being taken north to a government auction site where bidding for an entire segment of wall starts at just $5. Well, you know what Mexico should do, right? Mexico should buy it on the cheap and then build it. And then this way they can fulfill Trump's promise of having Mexico build the wall. I like it. I'm just saying. That's a great way for them to do it. They can get it on the cheap. Also, if you want a cheap border wall, just go to richiesborderwall@gmail.com. This is a disgrace, this administration. They're trying to send all of our money overseas to Ukraine before they get out of Dodge. And then they're trying to get rid of the border wall before they get out of Dodge. Isn't that something? Sorry, we got deliveries coming to the house. I'll just mute that stupid ring. Here we go. A Border Patrol agent estimates that up to a half a mile worth of wall is being transported every day. And they're showing the pictures of this from Daily Wire. Why are we doing this? Trump wants to build the wall. There's a lot of border wall. If this is true, and I have no reason to doubt that it's true, this is a disgrace, an absolute disgrace. And it's an investigation report for the Daily Wire by James Lelino. And he has a source in Customs and Border Protection who says when Trump comes back and he wants to start the border wall all over again, the entire funding fight is going to happen all over again. Congressman Eli Crane says this is a direct affront to the will of the people. You're damn right it is. Disgraceful move by this administration to do this on the way out the door. But yeah, Mexico should buy it. $5. They do it at auction, and then they buy it, and then they can turn around and then build it on the cheap and then make Trump very, very happy because then Mexico built the wall at a bargain. At a bargain price. Bargain basement price. Unbelievable. There's nothing this administration does that doesn't just completely just infuriate me. The Justice Department, I talked about this earlier as well. If you're just catching up, I'll talk a little bit more about this. But they announced today, the Inspector General of the FBI, all of these people who were undercover FBI operatives, informants, whatever you want to call them, who were there on J6, January 6th, at least 26 of them that we know of. They have not named names. And I want to know if Ray Epps is one of those people. That's one of the things I want to know that I've got some questions about that I think we all have questions about. Oh, so I was going to get into this earlier. So Kash Patel, right? I really hope Kash Patel gets confirmed and I feel good about Kash Patel. But boy, oh, man, the Wall Street Journal killing him. And you got to ask yourself, what is it the Wall Street Journal doesn't like to let John Bolton, the warmonger, write this piece? John Bolton writes this opinion for the Wall Street Journal and says Cash Patel doesn't belong at the FBI. John Bolton, who's never met a war he doesn't love. And he writes the following: the president's constitutional obligation to take care that the laws be faithfully executed requires even-handed action in the national rather than his personal interest. His off-staffed intention to seek retribution against opponents, if implemented, facially contravenes the take care clause. Too many of Mr. Trump's personnel selections evidences assiduous search for personal fealty, not loyalty to the Constitution. Cash Patel's nomination for director of the FBI squarely fits this pattern. You know what John Bolton is angry about? John Bolton's angry about that when he was in the White House, he could not get Trump as national security advisor to go to war with Iran. That's what he's angry about, and that's why he wants to torpedo Cash Patel. This is what happens to people who get pushed out. They get pushed out, and then they want to make sure that nobody else gets a spot at the table. You know what I'm talking about. You've seen this happen. Bitter people leave companies, and then they hope the whole company torpedoes. It's like that. And he goes on and on to crash all these things. But here's a key tell here about John Bolton's true intentions. He proved to be less interested in his assigned duties than in worming his way into Mr. Trump's presence. Fiona Hill, the NSC senior director for Europe, testified to Congress during Trump's first impeachment hearing that Mr. Patel, at that time assigned to the International Organization's Directorate, participated in a May 2019 Oval Office meeting on Ukraine and that he engaged in various other Ukraine-related activities. Whatever he did on Ukraine while an NSC staffer, at least during my tenure, was unrestrained freelancing. See, what he wanted Cash Patel to do on Ukraine was to get President Trump to start spending more money on Ukraine before Russia even invaded it. I mean, let's face it, that's what John Bolton wanted. He wanted just America to be engaged militarily everywhere. If Mr. Trump is determined wrongly to remove Christopher Wray as FBI director, there are previous examples of appointees who restored faith in a battered Justice Department and FBI. In 1975, President Gerald Ford selected Edward Levy, Dean of the University of Chicago Law School, as Attorney General. And in 1978, President Jimmy Carter named Judge William Webster, a Republican, to be FBI director. But Mr. Patel is no Ed Levy or Bill Webster. I always say this: judge people by the character of the company they keep, and you can tell a lot about a person by his enemies. So if John Bolton's against you, that makes me really, really, really like you. It's the same reason why the Wall Street Journal editorial board doesn't like Tulsi Gabbard. And that infuriates me, too, because Tulsi Gabbard is going to be great at what she does. Her job is to go there and tell the president, hey, Mr. President, these are all the things that the government is doing against the American people. And hey, Mr. President, we got to do something about this. Good. That's what I want from Tulsi Gabbard. I think she's going to get in. Senator Marco Rubio, who has also got to go through his own confirmation process as Secretary of State, but he'll be a shoo-in. He had very positive things to say.
Rubio, I'm here with Tulsi Gabbard. She's here on the Hill meeting with my colleagues. She's going to be a great DNI, a Director of National Intelligence. It's a really important job. It oversees all of our intelligence agencies, and it's in need of reform. I think everybody would admit that. And so we need to bring in a reformer. And so I know her meetings are going to go well. Our conversation's gone great today, and we're just grateful you're willing to do it. If I'm here, I'd look forward.
Thank you. It's a wonderful opportunity. I'm grateful that President Trump has asked me to come and join the team and just appreciate your leadership and your support, both, of course, as you navigate through this process, but most importantly, as we work to serve the country.
Well, I look forward to working together with you on the cabinet and the great team that President Trump's put together.
See that? Good. Good. Good job, Marco. Good job. But nothing makes me happier than Chris Wray stepping down. I'm going to get into a little bit more about this and tie it into President Trump's Fury Road. I'll explain in the next segment, but this makes me so happy. I love this.
After weeks of careful thought, I've decided the right thing for the Bureau is for me to serve until the end of the current administration in January and then step down.
Oh, you know what it's like? It's like, you're not breaking up with me. I'm breaking up with you. Uh-huh. You're not breaking up with me. I'm breaking up with you. That's right. Uh-huh. That's right. Stop it. Stop it, Chris Wray. You're so silly. You're such a silly guy who abused the Constitution and weaponized the Department of Justice and the FBI against the American people. You stop it.
Is to keep the focus on our mission, on the indispensable work each of you is doing every single day. And in my view, this is the best way to avoid dragging the Bureau deeper into the fray while reinforcing the values and principles that are so important in how we do our work.
Work like going after moms at school board meetings and Catholics praying at mass and people praying outside of pro-life clinics and President Trump and Melania Trump and her lingerie drawer, you know, like that important work, that important work, Director. Yes.
Go without saying, but I'm going to go ahead and say it anyways. This is not easy for me.
No, actually, it is easy for you because Trump, the president, doesn't want you anymore. So it's very easy, actually. So this is incredibly easy. Bye-bye.
Love this place.
Aw.
I love our mission.
Aw.
And I love our people.
Aw.
But my focus is and always has been on us and on doing what's right for the FBI.
Do you think they'll get him a cake? Remember the end of Silence of the Lambs when Clarice Starling becomes an agent and they have that FBI cake with the big FBI logo on it? They take a slice and they hand it. Do you think they'll give him one of those cakes at his farewell party? That's the stuff that makes me... more than anything, I'm curious about that. The going away party and if they have that actual cake. Somebody had to think about it for the movie Silence of the Lambs, and I'm sure they had an FBI advisor who told them that's what they do with these things. Right? Let's get into a little bit more about why people are angry at the FBI, the Department of Justice, and how it led to Trump's victory. Shall we? Let's do that. But first, I want to tell you about privacy, because obviously this is a government that is engaged in weaponization and spying on the American people. But it's not just that. It's private corporations doing the same thing. And that's why you need Privacy Pro from DuckDuckGo. You got to have this. Look, for $10 a month, you will be able to ensure that you are protected when you're online. A suit of armor when you go out on the internet with three important essentials, a VPN, secure your data end to end, so that nobody, not even your internet service provider, can see what you're doing online. Personal information removal. So all the important stuff about you, your home address, phone numbers, email addresses, gone. And also identity theft restoration. If, God forbid, your identity is ever stolen, DuckDuckGo is going to get it back for you. $10 a month for all that? Are you kidding me? That is the bargain of our time because there are so many hackers and scammers out there that can cost you thousands of dollars and lots of headaches, plus just annoy you all the time with creepy ads. Get a 30-day free trial by going to duckduckgo.com/1210. Duckduckgo.com/1210. Do it today and sign up before the 30-day free trial goes away. You need this. How can you afford not to have this? $10 a month with a 30-day free trial to see just how easy it is to use. Duckduckgo.com/1210. Sign up now.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
72 days of fury. That's right. Fury. Welcome back to the show. Glad you're here today. 72 days of fury. That's what Trump called it with the Time magazine article announcing him as the person of the year. 72 days of fury. Trump has a ready explanation for his improbable resurrection. He even has a name for its climactic final act. Quote, I called it 72 days of fury, he says, as the interview gets underway. We hit the nerve of the country. The country was angry. It wasn't just the MAGA faithful. Trump harnessed deep national discontent about the economy, immigration, and cultural issues. His grievances resonated with suburban moms and retirees, Latino and black men, young voters, tech edgelords. While Democrats estimated that most of the country wanted a president who would uphold the norms of liberal democracy, Trump saw a nation ready to smash them, tapping into a growing sense that the system was rigged. Well, of course the system's rigged. Suburban moms. I still go back to that time Merrick Garland sent out that letter saying you might be a domestic violent extremist at the FBI meetings. I think about what COVID put these moms through. And then Robert F. Kennedy Jr. joining the ticket. joining a team, I should say, and talking about how unhealthy our food is and how processed it is, and then the question about whether we should be giving our kids all these vaccines and all these vaccines at once, and whether they should be spread out. I mean, all these questions that parents have. The indoctrination of our kids in the classroom, the woke school books, all of it. And that fury was there, absolutely, no question about it. The fury... Also today, as the Inspector General releases the report and says there were 26 FBI confidential human sources, they're like, oh, they're not undercover agents, but they're the same exact people that we suggested this entire time were probably there that day. Four of them went inside the restricted area. What were the others doing? We don't know. Was Ray Epps one of them? We don't know. Remember, he was the guy saying tomorrow we go in the Capitol. We go in the Capitol. That guy, Ray Epps. So all of this, obviously, you put it together and you just turn around and you say to yourself, okay, Americans have had enough. Enough is enough. Like, stop already. Stop. And what the Time magazine piece, I think, really underscores here is that America was craving change. Because the left had gone so far left, the pendulum had swung so far. Trump was the bulldozer here, but it's not just that Trump went to the right. Trump went right to the center on issues that were important to many Americans. Like, for example, when he came out and said there would not be a national abortion ban. When he came out and said that he was going to support states' rights on the issue. And I think as we think about it, that as soon as we can understand that when Trump decided to embrace early and mail-in voting, that was a big deal. And it was Rob Gleason, who was the former chair of the Pennsylvania Republican Party, according to the story, who went down to Mar-a-Lago, met with him and said, they don't want to wait. You got to tell them it's okay. You got to give them permission to vote in person. You got to give them permission to vote early. And that's exactly what happened. And we saw what happened after that. We saw that everybody was turning around and saying, let's do this. Let's support mail-in voting. Let's support early voting. Let's go out there, embrace this, go for it, and make it happen so that the RNC could know who voted, we could bank the votes, and we could do that. Excellent. That's exactly what needed to occur. Exactly what needed to occur. And it's why he won in a big way. It's why he won in a big, big way. And for a long time of it, I think that thinking in our own hesitation of early voting and mail-in voting and the excellent effort that was done by the Trump campaign, by Chairman Michael Whatley, by Laura Trump and others to convince us we could trust this election and this election would be fair. That was a great job. It was a psychological sea change. It resulted in Trump's victory in many, many ways. And I think it's going to play well in New Jersey next year in 2025 and Virginia next year in 2025. And it's going to propel Republican victories down the road. I have no doubts about that. I really do. I really believe those things. And as part of what Americans are angry about, is this idea that Joe Biden is pardoning people, including a Chinese spy who had over 4,000 images of children, sexualized children, pedophiles, this guy, pedophile pictures, and the guy gets clemency from Biden? Guy gets what? Charlemagne the God raising the point, Biden better never try to do these preemptive pardons. Old-ass Biden. I like how he calls him that. Old-ass Biden.
I don't think President Biden should do preemptive pardons either. Makes people look guilty, if you ask me. Biden should be pardoning all the nonviolent drug offenders in federal prison. He should be pardoning everybody in federal prison for nonviolent weed convictions, okay? He should be pardoning Marilyn Mosby. Those are the pardons he should be working on before he get his old ass up out of here.
And you don't think the preemptive, like, you know, there's people that Trump are going to be attacking, right? You know there's people that went at Trump, that tried to get him locked up. You know he's going to go with them.
Yeah, but why would I be pardoning you if you don't have any crimes connected to you? Don't that make you look guilty? If I give you a preemptive pardon?
No, it means that we know who Trump is and we know what Trump's probably going to do.
That means, or it could mean Trump knows something that we don't know. And that's why he's going after these people. I just don't understand why you would give somebody a preemptive pardon. Like, it just feels like you saying, okay, I know this person is guilty of something and Trump may go after them.
Because he said for the last couple of years he's going to be going at them.
Yeah, but I can't just go at you for no reason.
Donald Trump?
I mean, it just seems strange to do preemptive pardons. If you
all right.
Me. But what do I know? I stay out of white people. I try to stay out of white people's business.
You're right. Touche.
You know,
let's understand something here. What Charlemagne the God is getting at is that maybe these people did do something. Maybe these people actually did do something against Donald Trump. Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's the question. And that's the point. And that is exactly what the issue is. Oh, man. Wow. I'm telling you. I'm telling you right now, there are people who are trying to make excuses for the weaponization of this Department of Justice. We need to have all 26 names of those confidential human sources who were at the Capitol on January 6th and January 5th and what they were doing and what they encouraged people to do. And all of that is going to come out. And it will. It will come out because Cash Patel is going to make sure it comes out. Damn right. It's absolutely going to come out. Here's Congressman Jim Jordan talking with Maria Bartiromo about the FBI and the weaponization.
Well, you really put a spotlight on all of this with your weaponization subcommittee and really connected the dots to see what was going on, and it was politics. So do you think Cash Patel can come into the FBI and fix this?
Yeah, we need to get back to the FBI being focused on what Americans think their FBI should be doing. Right now, Maria, think about this. The FBI budget's over $11 billion a year. More than half of that money and more than half the personnel are focused on intelligence gathering, counterintelligence, and domestic terrorism. I think most Americans think their FBI is out there stopping traditional bad guys who are in gangs or organized crime or money laundering or whatever. I think that's where most Americans think their FBI should be focused, but instead, they got this dual purpose now, and there's so much on the intelligence gathering and this domestic terrorism. You know, the reason why they put together this memo in the Richmond field office of the FBI that said pro-life Catholics should be deemed extremists, it's ridiculous. That's what has to change. And again, I think it starts with the leadership, certainly with the President of the United States, with President Trump, and the good people he's nominating and putting forward for these key cabinet and agency positions.
It was October 4th, 2021, when the memorandum came out for the director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the director of the Executive Office for U.S. Attorneys, Assistant Attorney General, Criminal Division, and all United States Attorney Generals, U.S. Attorneys General, from the Attorney General of the United States, partnership among federal, state, local, tribal, and territorial law enforcement to address threats against school administrators, board members, teachers, and staff. This memorandum, in my opinion, coming on the heels of everything we put parents through during COVID and everything we put our children through during COVID, was the beginning of the end for the Democrats. It was the beginning of the dam breaking. And then when the Democrats went after Donald Trump in court, after accusing parents of being domestic violent extremists, the credibility of the government was absolutely 0.0. That's right, 0.0. This, by the way, is the top story of the day today, brought to you by my buddy, Dr. Mike Veneria, VeneriaDental.com. Go see him today for your perfect smile, VeneriaDental.com. In recent months, there has been a disturbing spike in harassment, intimidation, and threats of violence against school administrators, board members, teachers, and staff who participate in the vital work of running our nation's public schools. While spirited debate about policy matters is protected under our Constitution, that protection does not extend to threats of violence or efforts to intimidate individuals based on their views. None of that was real. It was all a fugazi. But what they wanted was the FBI involved here, and that's where he says, coordination and partnership with local law enforcement is critical to implementing these measures for the benefit of our nation's nearly 14,000 public school districts. To this end, I am directing the Federal Bureau of Investigation, working with each United States attorney, to convene meetings with federal State, local, tribal, and territorial leaders in each federal judicial district within 30 days of the issuance of this memorandum. These meetings will facilitate the discussion of strategies for addressing threats against school administrators, board members, teachers, and staff, and will open dedicated lines of communication for threat reporting, assessment, and response. October of 2021. Then they go after Donald Trump in court. And at that point, parents turned around and said, this is all BS. This is all BS. And even people that didn't vote for the guy in 2020, now that they saw that they were being targeted to this because they spoke out at school board meetings, a lot of these people were Democrats. Outraged moms, outraged dads at school board meetings who were Democrats. A lot of this had to do with COVID. A lot of this had to do with lockdowns. And a lot of this had to do with the curriculum. And they were like, hell no. We're not doing this anymore. So yeah, the fury that Donald Trump tapped into was a fury that Joe Biden, Merrick Garland, and Christopher Wray perpetuated against the American people. And we will still need answers to all of these things as we get real change in Washington. Coming up, New Jersey has a film tax credit, but is it worth the price the taxpayers pay? We'll find out from our friends at the Garden State Initiative. Are you and I as taxpayers, or any of us as taxpayers, should we be subsidizing Hollywood? We'll talk about it in our fourth and final hour. Don't go away.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
All right, so movies are a big deal, as you know. There's a new movie coming out December 25th. It's about Bob Dylan. It's called A Complete Unknown. And there was a big article about how many sites in New Jersey the movie was filmed in and how much revenue was generated. But is the New Jersey film subsidy tax credit worth it? Here to talk about it with me is an esteemed communications professional. Audrey Lane is the president of the Garden State Initiative, and she joins me now on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD. Audrey, thanks for making time today. How you doing?
I'm great. Thanks so much for having me today. I really appreciate it.
Are you a movie buff?
Not so much.
No?
I gotta wait till it's streaming, and then I want to be comfy and in my jammies when I watch it. How about you?
Well, like you, I have three kids. Mine are 10, 8, and 4, so they're looking forward to Moana 2, and it's a good way to just kill time. So yeah, we wind up going to the movies probably more than we should, but it's so expensive. That's the one thing, though. It really is expensive, but I know these theaters pay a lot of property taxes, and we'd hate to see them close up, so try to support them whenever I can,
Absolutely. I remember those years, Rich, and then you're going to graduate to the years where you're looking for the appropriate content that will entertain everyone in the family.
Yeah,
so good luck with that.
We're definitely there right now, I can tell you that, and making sure that the content is not indoctrinating our children, which is also a subject for another show. But tell us, first of all, about Garden State Initiative. I've had your predecessor, Regina, on the show several times before, but tell us a little bit about your advocacy.
Absolutely. So Garden State Initiative is a think tank that looks at the economic issues in New Jersey that really affect all of us. So you don't have to be an economist for the economy to affect you in New Jersey. And things like corporate business tax, when you really boil it down, it matters to all of us because it affects the revenue of the state and therefore your taxes. So we really take those bigger issues and boil them down and look at how to make New Jersey a better place where we can prosper and maybe turn the corner on some of this economic development that we'd love to see in the state.
Absolutely. And so let's talk about a study that you recently did regarding New Jersey's film subsidy. So give us the background on this.
So like you said, there's a lot being said about the film industry right now in New Jersey, and there's a lot of energy about it, which is not a bad thing. But the fact is we're putting about 1% of our state's revenue toward this industry that accounts for less than 0.1% of all state jobs.
Wow.
So the math isn't adding up here. And we really just boiled it down on an economic level. It's not personal. We like movies. And,
sure.
And we'd love to see, there's a lot that the state can do to enhance movie development. I mean, just cutting red tape and making it easier. And there's really no correlation if you look at the film tax credits that largely subsided under the Christie administration. There's no correlation in an increase in movie production. Yes, there's been a this summer was big for movies in New Jersey, and there's been a lot of energy. But over time, you'll see there's not a huge correlation.
How does it work in terms of, say, I'm a movie studio, I want to shoot a movie in New Jersey. How does the tax subsidy work?
You know, I wish I could drill down on that for you. I'm not an economist, and our study really doesn't get into that sector. I think you go through a grant application process at the NJEDA, and that's really the best information I could give on you there.
But so, basically, it's the whole purpose is to encourage a company to choose to come to New Jersey and shoot there. I guess the proponents of this would argue that if you have a shooting location, then somehow that's going to generate revenue for the state. But I just don't know how exactly, because I mean, it's cool to see these places. Like it's really cool to see, like, wow, in The Dark Knight, that's Newark, you know, where Batman. Right. Fights Bane, but how does it really generate revenue to the state's economy?
So proponents of these types of film tax credits, and New Jersey's not alone, there are several states that have really thrown these out there, will argue that it increases job creation, and it will spur economic activity, and that there would be no production of movies without subsidies. So those are really the three pillars that people argue. Gotcha. I already touched on that point about, you know, the subsidies driving production. And so I'll check that box there. But as far as job creation, these aren't long-term jobs that are based in New Jersey. As I said, we're talking about 0.1% of the jobs in our state. Sure. So I'm going to check that box for not necessarily, you know, fulfilling a big need in New Jersey. And then the third is that production spurs economic activity elsewhere. And if you look at our revenue over time, when you compare the film tax credits, we don't have an increase in revenue or economic growth or economic activity during that time period. So there's really no numerical correlation that we can point to. And that's really the crux of the study.
And you see, that's what I was wondering, right? Because the Star Ledger, the NJ.com had this piece about this upcoming Bob Dylan movie, a Complete Unknown, and they had all the shooting locations. And I remember this when The Sopranos was shot in New Jersey, too, and they would show all the shooting locations. And I always thought, all right, well, that's cool, but does the diner where they shoot really get a lot of money out of it? Or I mean, I'm sure they get a one-day fee or whatever to use their location, but is it really generating the kind of thing? Because if we're giving out a tax credit of any kind, what we're really talking about here is we're picking winners and losers. So if we're going to do that, and we're going to pick a winner here being a certain industry, then as a taxpayer of New Jersey, because I live in South Jersey, I want to know, well, what am I getting in return for this, other than bragging rights of being like, oh, that diner's in Blairstown, where they, you know, in the original Friday the 13th movie, when I had breakfast there once. I mean, beyond just that, what do I really get out of it? And it seems like the study that Garden State Initiative put out, it doesn't seem like a whole lot. So I know Phil Murphy wanted New Jersey to be the California of the East Coast. So is this more of like an ego thing? Like, oh, look, Gavin Newsom, we're shooting movies here now, too.
So I'll let you stay on the politics side of it. But
Fair enough. Far
as the math on it, we've got a pie chart in our report that has the number of jobs or the market share of jobs. So California's got about half, no matter what everybody else does. And then we've got New York, New Jersey, Louisiana, and Georgia fighting for the other sectors. We're not a huge player in this. Mm-hmm. And again, we're talking about less than a percentage point of national jobs, right? Less than 1%. This is what we're throwing money at. And Louisiana right now, Georgia boosted their tax credits, but Louisiana did it as well. And they saw a blip, but now they saw that once other states throw film tax credits out, they're losing their market share. So they're actually in their legislature right now considering rescinding those tax credits. And Governor Landry is right at the heart of it, saying, you know, I always question this, and it's coming to fruition. These didn't work out so well. So we're fighting for fractions of this industry.
Do you have a sense, Audrey Lane, of how much the state of New Jersey has spent on this?
So I do. We have spent about $430 million a year on this. Mm-hmm. And if you look at it, they talk about a quote unquote multiplier effect of 800 billion, right? Or the annual economic activity in New Jersey, I'm sorry, is 800 billion. And if we're talking about this multiplier effect and possibly 300 million being that multiplier effect of economic activity, which you'll read about, but we're still throwing $430 million in tax credits at it. I wasn't a great math student, but that doesn't work out so well. So, you know, this one is really dollars and cents. And I, you know, I challenge the numbers of jobs that are created because I want to know how many of these are full-time jobs, how many of these are New Jersey residents. Mm-hmm. And if you're talking about the film industry and people in this industry, though, you'll have the salaries of executives and TV personalities that work in New York City on a daily basis and live in New Jersey. That has nothing to do with this, but their income will fall into the category that's being reported on this. As a matter of fact, anecdotally, I had a call this morning with a video production team that does some work for us. There they are. They have corporate clients in New Jersey. They do commercials. They do, you know, videos, things like that. And the small businesses like that, the small video production industries that are based in New Jersey are not seeing a dollar of these kinds of subsidies. So it's not going to this, you know, the small video crews that are doing work in day in and day out. And he said he's never once received a call to help on any video production with a big movie. So, you know, this is the frustration.
Yeah,
as a matter of fact, this summer, there was a movie that was filmed right in my town, and which was just fortuitous, if I'm being honest. And we saw the trailers. They parked at our church parking lot, and they were from New York, Pennsylvania. The caterers were from Brooklyn, you know, and I wound up talking to one of the production people on site, and he says, oh yeah, we'll leave here. We're going to go stay at our hotels in New York. And they're not even staying in hotels here. So, and they were in day in, day out. So they were leaving New Jersey to stay in New York and then coming back to film the next day.
The fact that they couldn't even serve Jersey food. I mean, give these people pork roll, for God's sake, and not Brooklyn food. Come on.
Oh, pork roll. There you go again. You already gave the caveat that you're from South Jersey, Rich.
only I used to call it Taylor Ham, but since, you know, I relocated, I got to call it pork roll now. That's how it works, Audrey, as you know. All right. So what other initiatives is Garden State working on right now? Talk to us about some of the other big projects.
So sure, a big issue for us has been energy, and we're going to follow up. The New Jersey Energy Master Plan is being refreshed this year. We are anxiously awaiting the refresh. It's due in 2024. I've been asking publicly and privately when the refresh is due out. Answer is we're working on it. Mm-hmm. So we've got a couple weeks here. We'll see.
Now, is this the Energy Master Plan that calls for eliminating gas-powered vehicles by 2035 and all of the gigantic wind turbines that people hate and then destroying and killing whales and dolphins? I mean, that Energy Master Plan is what we're talking about, right?
That is the Energy Master Plan. There's only one New Jersey Energy Master Plan, and there's been a lot of discussion about exactly, you know, what the seven pillars that are outlined in that plan will actually accomplish, mm-hmm. and how much it will cost to the residents of New Jersey. So we're back to that economic impact. And this summer I had the opportunity, or this fall I had the opportunity to talk at a hearing held by Congressman Jeff Van Drew, who was starting to look into the cost and rate increases that really are going to follow here. They're going to follow all of these aspirational energy plans. Listen, we all want clean energy.
Sure.
I'm not going to sit here and say, you know, I want dirty energy in our state. That's ridiculous. But we need to look at the cost and how to implement it. And really, one thing I've been quite vocal on lately, Rich, is we have these plans and we have solar, which is a useful part of our all-in energy plan. But when the solar panels come to their end of life, which our first wave is coming to the end of life now, we have no plan for getting rid of them. Mm-hmm. There's a cost for decommission, and that's not built in. So right now, we're putting these solar panels that are at the end of their life, trucking them to Pennsylvania to dump them in their landfills because we can't accept them. So we've got no plan for decommission. There's no plan for decommission on these pending wind turbines, which, as we all know from seeing what happened in Nantucket, you know, there could be some damage and some cleanup required. So that will be passed on to ratepayers since there's no plan. I can't imagine there being a natural gas energy plant that would be allowed to put up without be built without a decommission plan. This is crazy. But it's just sailing through without a full life cycle decommission plan.
Yeah, well, look, I hope you stay on top of it. I'm sure you will. And keep us posted, Audrey, because the Energy Master Plan is a huge thing we talk about on the show. Congressman Jeff Van Drew was just on this week talking about drones, but we always do talk about energy and the wind turbines, and hopefully we'll have some big changes ahead in 2025, so we're optimistic. So where can people go to learn more about Garden State Initiative?
At gardenstateinitiative.org.
Great. Well, listen, Audrey Lane, thanks so much for joining us here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
I'll be right back as we continue along here. And actually, no, I'm out of time. That's it. Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla is up next. Don't forget, December 20th, speaking of wind turbines off the Jersey Shore, we will be live in Cape May for our last show of the year. And look, there's no show scheduled for next year, so you better come out on December 20th and join us at the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey. All right, I'll be filling in actually tomorrow for Jimmy Failla on Fox Across America. So we'll have 7 wonderful hours of radio together tomorrow. Make sure you join us for that, all right? And in the meantime, keep the conversation going on X at Rich Zeoli. Thank you.